Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mania's in a mall, Nitro comes this fall, Yankum is decayed, Lex Luger doesn't stay, Raw has become a chore. Generation boards, they keep on losing fans. It's eating at McMahon. Let's keep on pushing Diesel hard. Let's have Mabel win the crown. Let's create crappy gimmicks, and we'll kill off all the towns. All of our TV is filmed in armories. The budget's getting tight. Nothing seems to excite Henry Godwin, Dean Douglas, and the Body Donners. We got Hemsley and Mantar. Watchings of Avatar and over on Nitro, they're putting on decent shows while we still try to survive. 1995. Come check out in your house. Cost an arm and leg. Sean and Brett carry them all, but no saving Winnipeg. Lawrence Taylor fans start making Mania plans, working with Bam Bam, who will carry him as best he can. Why did the Macho Man have to jump ship? And when did this product stop being hip? Why is Pierre now a pirate? Whatever happened to Hogan, Piper? Next on NBC, Henry Godwin, Dean Douglas, and the Body Donnas. We got Hemsley and Mantar, and the Watchings of Avatar. And over on Nitro, they're putting on decent shows while we still try to survive in 1995. This success, it's all bad. Why is Spicoli calling himself red? Why did Rhonda Singh become Bertha? Please make this stop, stop, stop. Really hate Godwin, Dean Douglas, and the Body Donnas. We got Hemsley and Mantar, and the Watchings of Avatar. And over on Nitro, they're putting on decent shows while we still try to survive. Godwin, Dean Douglas, and the Body Donnas. We got Hemsley and Mantar, and the Watchings of Avatar. And over on Nitro, they're putting on decent shows while we still try to survive in 1995.
Welcome everyone to the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review, as the other Cultaholic lads stare into the void that is 2020, COVID clashes and Roman and Paul. We are here via our IcoPro powered DeLorean. We are staring into a very different void. A void of, well, you heard some of the highlights just then of 1995 in the new generation era. Oh my days, off we go. Who be we, by the way? I be fake Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio, Tom Campbell. I am with the bear in the big blue bar cage. Titan Shrugged, the head pen of Cultaholic, who doesn't need a pencil. He gets it right every time. Justin Henry from Off Of America.
He really captured the essence of 1995 in one song.
Absolutely nailed it. Big love to Strumowitz for our opening song as we head headlong into 1995. You can find him at SSZoomer4 on Twitter.
It's sweet. We entered a new year, and boy, look what we stepped in.
Oh, we stepped in a big old pat of 1995 New Generation, mate.
But say not the song, because the song is excellent, but we stepped in something a little bit more rancid.
Oh, my days, mate. Well, before we dig into 1995... just want to quickly wrap up 94. Going to blast through this. The Observer Awards for 94, Justin.
All right.
Let's take a moment.
I could try to guess if you want me to.
I would love you to. I'd love you to guess for all 397 categories.
Okay, best nose hair goes to Antonio Pena.
Oh, you guessed it already, mate. Oh, my God.
I'm an expert.
Right. Okay. So, in some particular order, the Observer Awards for 1994, as we wrap up that year in wrestling, the Reader's Choice Awards. What do you reckon?
That's freaking subjective, man. I don't know who. Brett.
The Observer Readers chose Sabu.
Is that a sign of the times?
Isn't it just, mate? The best face.
Baby face, you mean?
Yes.
Best Babyface, 1994. American or international?
International.
Oh, I'm going to be possibly way off here. Who's Babyface in New Japan then? Wait, is it possibly Conan for AAA?
It's Onita.
What?
I know, right?
What?
I know, right?
Are we sure 94 wasn't stranger than 95?
It was a very strange year in general. Best heel.
Best heel. Ooh. International or U.S.?
International.
Okay, I'll tell you what, going forward, if they're American, tell me. And if they're not, I'll just presume international because I'm probably going to get this wrong no matter what.
Fair enough.
I was going to say Jake for his AAA stuff.
The late, great Art Bar.
Pretty sure that had a lot to do with him winning.
Mm-hmm. Manager of the Year.
So this is international too?
No, this is American.
This is American. Cornette?
It is Jim Cornette, sir. We got a point on the board. Point on the board.
All right.
The worst gimmick. It's American, surprisingly.
You're kidding me.
I know!
Would it be the Underfaker?
It would be Dave Sullivan from WCW.
I bet I was close, though.
I'm sure there wasn't much in it. Best gimmick. This is American.
Is this the actual Taker?
It is the Undertaker.
Yeah, I know he was very popular with the Observer readers, especially in the early years.
Promoter of the Year. This is international.
If it's not Pena, who the hell would it be?
You saying Pena? It is, for the fourth year running, Shoei Baba from All Japan.
Oh, I should have known All Japan was in a groove at that point.
Really was. Best booker?
Paul?
Paul Heyman from the ECWs.
Okay.
The worst promotion? I know,
WCW?
Right? It is WCW. Second year running. Well done, lads.
It's such a great first half, too.
Worst feud of the year. It's from America, strangely.
Worst feud of the year. Is it WWF?
It is indeed WWF.
Okay. It's either Taker or Lawler Doink.
It's Lawler and Doink. Well done, mate.
Okay.
In a similar vein, worst match of the year. It's in America.
Would that be the Survivor Series match that you, me, and Matthew had to sit through?
Royal Court versus Clowns or Us. Well done.
Yeah.
Worst television show.
Worldwide?
Close. WCW Saturday Night.
Oh, it's... What a shame.
Most disgusting promotional tactic.
Oh, for 94?
Yeah. It's a weird one, this.
Is it pretending Taker was dead?
No, it was pretending Flair was retiring. The Ric Flair retirement, apparently the most disgusting promotional tactic.
Oh, they've done worse.
I know, right? It must have been a quiet year. Best maneuver. This is international.
Well, let's see. The Dragon Rana hadn't been invented yet. Best internet. Is anything Misawa did?
What would you like to suggest from Misawa?
Well, I'm close then.
Maybe.
Tiger Driver 91?
It was the Sasuke special.
Ouch. Cross me up there.
Worst major show.
Major show?
This is American. It's on your shores.
It's on our shores. Worst major show. Please tell me it's Blackjack Brawl.
It is the Blackjack Brawl from the UWF. What a treat.
Hell yeah.
Best.
I have the shirt of the poster.
Oh, you lucky devil. You lucky devil.
I'm so proud. I wear it sometimes.
Best major show.
Mania 10.
Super J-Cup.
Oh.
It's the Observer, mate. Come on. Tokyo Dome gets 5 stars immediately.
Mania 10 had 2 5-star matches. I don't care.
Yeah, but Tokyo Dome had 12. The worst announcer. This broke my heart, this one did. It's American.
It's not Monsoon, is it?
It's Monsoon for the 4th year running.
All right, listen, you effing Observer, I'm going to tell you something right now. Gorilla Monsoon is a legend. You are all crippled, decrepit, lonely losers who wouldn't know quality if it bit the acne off your face. You will apologize to Gino, and you will do so in perpetuity.
There's Justin Henry going straight for the prominent projection of the protuberance on that one.
The external occipital protuberance.
That's the one. Best announcer.
I hope it's Monsoon too.
Sadly, it is Joey Styles.
I had a feeling because Joey was kind of becoming a cult figure at that point.
The Rookie of the Year.
Oh, this is kind of a... Who is... I hope it's 911 from ECW.
It is ECW. It's Mikey Whipwreck, though.
Oh, good. Mikey. I love Mikey.
The most underrated.
All right, so who in 94 was getting F'd over on a possible push? Should have been pushed with... I want to say Austin.
The answer is Brian Pillman.
I was so close. I was in the right tag team.
The most overrated.
Hogan.
It is Hogan. Well done, mate.
They OD'd on Hogan in 94 against their will.
Best high flyer.
Sasuke or Sabu.
Thunder Liger.
Same people.
Best brawler.
No. I bet people in terms of even being high flyers. I don't mean anything else by that.
Don't worry,
best
though.
Brawler? Best brawler. Brooklyn? No, I'm going to say...
I'd have voted Brooklyn.
Cactus.
Cactus Jack, of course it is. Best technical wrestler?
Best technician. Brett?
Benoit. Christopher Benoit.
I should have known.
Most charismatic? Think back to best face.
Now it's been a while. Onita?
It was Onita. Mr. Charisma.
Onita actually hasn't seen Charisma. He really does.
Most improved.
Most improved for 1994. Razor?
Diesel.
Same group.
Vinegar strokes now of the awards. Here we go. Feud of the year.
Brett and Owen.
Los Gringos Locos versus AAA.
Ah.
Match of the year.
Shawn and Razor.
Yeah, Mania 10, lavish shenanigans. Easy money. The best weekly TV show.
So help me God if this is Raw.
It was not Raw. Of course it wasn't. ECW Hardcore TV picked up that particular award. Promotion of the year. AAA getting the nod. Best interview.
Best interview. So we're talking. I guess this is best promos then. Cactus.
Ric Flair.
I can't argue.
Oh. Most outstanding wrestler.
Sabu.
For the 2nd year running, it was Kenta Kobashi.
It's Okay.
And Wrestler of the Year.
Wrestler for 94. God, there's a myriad you can go with here. You can go with Brett. You can go with someone from All Japan. You can go.
I'm going to give you a clue. I'm going to say international.
Okay. Liger?
It was, in fact, Toshiaki Kawada.
Man, it's usually when in like a certain year they key in on one person and they like speak and they win like 10 awards and it's a lot easier to figure this stuff out. But I guess there was just like a gamut of emotions here.
All sorts going on there. Before we get into this week's episode of Raw, just going to quickly give Meltzer's opinions for 1995. Nostradamus Dave for this particular bit in The Observer.
Well, I think it's going to happen. I believe in the year 2000, Zend, the old Conan bit.
Okay, Dave's feelings on the WWF in 995. My feeling is that the WWF will be the most adaptive to change in 1995. It has to be. Unlike in WCW, the money WWF loses right now, it comes out of Vince McMahon's pocketbook. So money losses aren't just fun and games to him, as they are with people running WCW. He obviously is very serious about his bottom line, and it must be a precarious bottom line these days, as exemplified by no revenge and no major raids in the other direction. All the rumors of WWF going to a Japanese-like system in 95, with more parity on type and clean finish, means that top baby faces are going to have to do jobs or the system won't work. But for a Japanese system to work means WWF would have to greatly improve its house show work rate and quality of its crew overall. The United States, as it stands now, doesn't have the grassroots system of Japan or Mexico when it comes to creating new stars and giving them the necessary fundamental background. Instead, as WCW showed with Alex Wright and Jean-Paul Levesque on the last pay-per-view, promotions are so desperate to create new stars, they are pushing people well before they are ready, and it shows on these big cards. WCW won't change in 1995. Hogan is in charge. Hogan only knows 1980s American style. Ric Flair only knows it as well. In the late Hogan 1980s, American world, the top face is Superman and not athletes, and he doesn't lose clean. The top heel never wins clean. Where's the heat if the heels wins without clean cheating? The only problem is in 1994, no company with that attitude made a profit. So that's Dave on the American wrestling scene going into 95. What do you reckon? Some of that ringing true?
Well, he obviously didn't he didn't foretell what was going to happen. And I don't think anybody did going into 95 because Bischoff didn't get clearance for Nitro until May. So obviously he didn't see how things were going to turn out where the number two promotion by default was going to go head to head with number one on the prime wrestling night and then change the business forever. But I mean, who the hell Bischoff didn't see it coming at the time of that writing. So it's you can't really fault him for being wrong, can you?
No, not at all. We're, you know, 95 is uncharted territory for all involved.
It was a pivotal year. It was a painful year. Mm. It was an interesting year. It was the best of times. It was the blurst of times.
And let us take a cromulent step into this horrendous year in wrestling, Justin. It is time. We can't delay it any longer. Let's begin.
Hold my hand.
No, I'm holding it, mate. I'm clutching your hand so tight I can see my knuckles going blue. But we are stepping into 1995, the first Monday Night Raw of the annus horribilis of the World Wrestling Federation. This is what all our dreams are built up to. Justin, over to you to guide us through this week's episode of Monday Night Raw.
Well, in fairness, this episode was taped in 1994, so we are starting out with the final pailful of bilge from that year. This was taped on December 12th at Liberty High School in Liberty, New York, and this encapsulates 94 and 95 almost in one 45-minute capsule. We start out with a promo from Jeff Jarrett and the Roadie. Jarrett has these incredibly garish shades on. He looks like he's wearing two glazed donuts over his eyes. He works in the ain't he great catchphrase. He's apparently there's a CMA rep here because tonight is his singing debut. this is a big night. I know you can't wait. Tommy, I know you can't wait to hear Jeff Jarrett croon.
I am excited. Very excited.
And on commentary this week, we have Gorilla Monsoon replacing Vince because Vince is apparently under the weather, which is probably carny for hungover. I mean, it was New Year's, so.
And not just anybody replacing him, is it, though?
Nope, it's Gorilla Monsoon, the person the Observer readers called the worst announcer of the year. I take incredible umbrage with it. You can all go screw.
That sucks. I hate the Observer for that. 4 years in a row, Gorilla the worst. That's not true.
So it's Monsoon and Sean and holy green screen.
Oh, it's bad, isn't it? Nothing like a good bad green screen, is there?
No, it's Monsoon and Sean sitting in front of the screen, and we're off to a rip-roaring start for 95. I should point out that it's aired on Monday, January 2nd, so we are right at the very entrance of the new year. New Year's Day, which is the year before. We're in college football bowl season. We're headed toward the Royal Rumble. And this is what WWF has cooked up 3 weeks before the first big pay-per-view of the year. We start out with a match that looks to be pretty promising. Bam Bam Bigelow and Tatanka versus the team soon to be known as the Allied Powers, Lex Luger and Davey Boy Smith. On paper, it doesn't sound bad at all.
Mm-mm.
So Luger gets jumped before Bulldog even enters, which I wrote here, Tom paid them all to prevent Bulldog's pyro.
Yes! Although they still did it. I'm pretty sure we still had the Rockets' red glare line.
I don't think we did. Because I don't recall it.
Vince.
So it's a clothesline city on Bam Bam, Luger spamming his best move. Bulldog gets in on the act. Lots of clotheslines, I wrote. I made sure to note that because there must have been a lot of goddamn clotheslines here.
Sean even points it out on commentary.
Well, yeah. Sean asked, what Luger would do if he couldn't clothesline somebody. Which is a nice little... You can tell Sean is just in full troll mode already.
Oh, he is beautifully trolling.
Like he cares. So Tatanka needs Luger to get the heat. We get some... Get some chops here, lots of basic wrestling. It's a very lazy heat segment here, an even lazier bear hug applied by Tatanka on Luger. And already, I spotted the continuity error, Tom.
Oh?
You see, while the cameras are probably doing their absolute damnedest to make sure they didn't film this part, we could see Vince sitting at ringside.
I never spied that!
I did at least twice.
Oh, amazing.
It's all of a sudden Vince sounds like an Italian from North Jersey.
Incredible.
Yeah, this 95. I mean, it's 94, but it's also 95 because the show's 94. The commentary is 95. So Luger hits a back suplex, but Bam Bam splashes him, which was like the one good spot of this match. We get the alleged hot tag of the Bulldog. I did put a question mark after the word hot because I wasn't sure if it was a hot tag.
It was a lukewarm tag.
It was more tepid. It was a room temperature tag. Not quite frigid, but room temperature. Davey gets the power slam on Tatanka. By the way, the entire Babyface comes in and cleans house segment was like two moves.
Wasn't much to it, was there?
No, dude. There's no sustained getting... You know, keep the crowd pumped, you know, keep playing with their emotions. No, it's just Bulldog's in. Oh, we're going to the finish. Gets him up for the power slam. Drops him. But DiBiase pulls the Tonka outside. There's a brawl at ringside. Hey, it's a double count out. Who knew?
First match of the year is a non-finish. Is that not a sign of things to come?
Yes. As Sean notes, that Luger has fallen short again. So, yes, we are off to a great start. We have no satisfaction as the year begins, Tommy.
Is there something a bit crap, do you think, about Ted DiBiase's in-ring graphics? I feel like it's just the when you watch, like, watching the modern stuff now, watching the Thunderdome and how, like, how amazing the effects are, like fireworks and everything changing color. And then in 95, how you've just got $1 just sort of projected into the middle of the wrestling ring for Ted DiBiase.
Well, I mean, it might seem pretty hokey now, but it was a bit more cutting edge for 94, I would think.
I imagine it probably was, but it just made me laugh. I just thought, oh, just one tiny little dollar.
Anarchy Rules 99, as our watch along on Saturday night, and me being a big ECW mark from the day, I got to say, even though I greatly enjoyed the show, a lot of it hasn't aged as well in 21 years. And it's just, it happens. You know, you watch old stuff, things just don't hold up either technologically or in terms of prevailing attitude. Think, you know, attitudes change, technology changes. Some things are quaint, but you couldn't do them today, you know?
Mm-hmm. What stood out to you from the show you watched on Saturday that didn't quite hold well?
Well, some of the crowd chants for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, some of the commentary, like I mean, Joe Styles and Don Callis were a great team because Don Callis was just so naturally antagonistic, and Styles knew how to just respond with, like, you know, annoyed anger. But it was like they used way too many insider terms.
Mm-hmm.
And like, while 15-year-old me wouldn't have minded, 36-year-old me was kind of like, all right, you're getting excessive, guys. And of course, you know, the bare bones production value of ECW that the younger people at that watch along were pointing out. Like, yeah, I see it. It's not like indies today have, like, you know, entrance ramps with like smoke machines and miniature trons for guys. Not so much 99 ECW. There was no budget.
No.
So, yes, it's times change, and usually for the better. Hopefully.
Times, like plans, change.
Yes. Plans, change. Dr. Malcolm Meltzer. Life, finds a way. John.
Yes! First John in 95. John! Stick Meltzer in Jurassic Park!
With Bruce Pritchard as Nedry.
Oh, ho, ho! That, please. That'd be lovely.
Chat me up. Why'd you get eaten by a dinosaur?
That clip is just Meltzer thinking sped up.
It is. Meltzer is Goldblum. Goldblum is Meltzer.
Goldblum. Goldblum. Don't add to that. It gets too complicated.
Yes. Speaking of complicated, we have the Royal Rumble report, which this is how weird 95 is. Todd Pettengill was the first person on this show that I agreed with on anything, other than Sean, of course. Todd shoots on the fact that we had a double count out in the opening match. He says, you know what? I don't think that anyone made a New Year's resolution that said, I'd love to see a double count out. Todd is bearing this show.
Todd dropping the pipe bombs.
And Todd is also sick of football. I wonder who said him that line. But Todd did get the Super Bowl. I'm sorry, stutter attack. Todd did get the Super Bowl, right? He said, just get the 49ers the rings now. And they did. They buried the Chargers in horrific fashion in Super Bowl 29. Beat them 49-26, one of the most one-sided Super Bowls ever. He makes a Bill Buckner reference about the 86 World Series just to lose Boston fans. If you don't know that, look it up. It's heartbreaking. Unless you hate Boston, in which case you'll exult when you say it. And just when I think that Todd's kind of on my good side here, he's quoting Wayne's World.
Oh, this was a bit. This is all. This is him talking about Pamela Anderson, calling her Abraham Lincoln, referencing Wayne's World. I drop TikTok references in Cultaholic news videos, and now I'm frightened that the videos that I have made are going to go the way of Todd Pettengill, where somebody's going to sit on a podcast in 20 years' time and go, "Oh my God, how dated is that?" It's terrifying. I'm about to become the next Todd Pettengill.
You want a dollar sign pyro thing?
Yes! I think I need one now. I need a dollar pyro, please. Hey, baby.
I see Circle of Life. So we run down the card here. We got Diesel and Brett for the title. Okay. Razor Jarrett Intercontinental. Fine. Apparently we have an update on the match that just happened, but we'll come back to it after this report. We have Taker IRS, Bleh. We have the Rumble entrance, Luger, Doink, Backlund, Bundy, Murdoch, Montoya, Jersey Quang, Bomb Godwin, Bulldog Sean, Mabel Moe, Kid Holly, and two new entrants, the Bushwhackers.
Did you say Jersey Quang?
I said Drosy Quang.
Oh, Drosy Quang.
Yes, sir.
Wasn't he a manager from WCW in the early 90s?
No, that's a Snooki's boyfriend. Quang hangs out in Seaside. Fist pumping while blowing mist.
Go on, lad.
And of course we had the tag title tournament final. We don't know who it's going to be yet. Meanwhile, we have Rhodey setting up a microphone in the ring. We haven't did we actually update the follow up on Todd's? We have an update statement like immediately after this, or we're just going to find out later. I can't remember now.
I think we find out later. Okay. Because I seem to remember that we kind of came back from a break and Vince, and then Gorilla sort of fills us in and goes, this match, we tried to do this match earlier and then it didn't happen, so here it is.
Really? That is what happened?
I'm pretty sure that's what happened.
Because I wrote in my notes thinking, like, okay, well, right after this report, Todd's going to throw it back to Gorilla. Gorilla's going to be like, well, we decided to restart the match from earlier. And
Maybe they did. It's been a while since I watched this episode, so they might have done that. But either way... Oh. What I love
I
is
blacked out.
I passed out at this point. I drank too much bleach at this point and passed out. went blind briefly. What we get here is, get this, Justin, it's a main event match in the main event.
I know. So we're sort of turning a corner here.
We're turning a very big corner.
Yes, it'll be revealed later that Jack Tunney, I guess they called him on the bat phone. He has ordered that the match from earlier be restarted so we can have a conclusive winner. I wish then it ended in like a ring breaking out like Braun Strowman or something.
They asked Jack Tunney, when do you want this match during the show and how much longer would you like them to fight? And he answered, further and more.
Very nice.
Thanks, mate. That hurt my head trying to get my head around that.
It wasn't even Tunney, it was just a Tunney pull string doll.
You're my favorite deputy.
Want to see my new Cadillac?
there is a backhander in my boots. On the take, Tunney. Come to my Canada office. Wink. Aside, there's no Canada office.
I'll take that bet.
Tunney, you don't say aside. You just do an aside. Come to my Canada office. Aside, there is no Canada office. You don't say aside, Tunney. Oh, God.
He can't even wink convincingly.
Well, let's just say this match moved me to a bigger house. Oh, I'm sorry. I meant to whisper that bit.
Tunney the clown.
Well, we knew that anyway. John, you don't need to Photoshop that. He's always been a clown to us.
That's why he borrowed all those extra doinks, because he wanted to be the only clown. He was trying to quarantine the competition.
Tunney the clown.
So, Duke the Dumpster Jersey versus Mike Bell. This was Mike Bell, right? I did write Bell.
It was Mike Bell. You are correctical.
Okay, because we are recording this a little bit later than intended, so it's been a bit since I've seen it, but thankfully I take somewhat copious notes. I'm relearning what I watched here.
Well done, mate. It's a journey, isn't it?
Duke tries stealing Bret Hart's gimmick by giving his hat to a kid in the crowd. What an honor.
That to me, like, getting Bret's glasses, that's cool. You know, getting Owen's glasses is funny because he's a baddie. Duke handing, like, the garbage man putting his hat on your head. Nah, you're good. You're good, mate. I don't want it.
He's passing on the curse of Thorn that way.
That's it now. Is it like, yeah, you put that on and then the kid now has the curse?
Yes, now he has to get up on Tuesday morning and pick up garbage. Get Justin's trash. You sure drink a lot of energy drinks, Mr. Henry. Just keep doing your job.
Just keep swimming.
What would be the worst thing that a wrestler could give a fan in terms of, like, as part of their costume?
Oh, great question. Let me think. I think... Okay, Gangrel spits blood directly into a kid's face.
Gangrel does not practice social distancing. Of course not, he's a vampire.
No, of course not. I think that's got to be the worst. Gangrel with his goblet of blood takes a swig next to a kid, just full on blasts it, gobs it into his face.
I would say Rikishi giving a kid the tights he wore in his previous match.
No! He peels them off. He holds them between his thumb and his forefinger and just adds them to the, or just drapes them over the kid's shoulder.
Well, it's
gee, thanks. I hate it.
I mean, the kid's more of than Jarrett. At least he could draw flies.
Hey! can I think what else could we add to kids as they walk? China could hand them the C-1000 machine gun. That'd be fun in the crowd.
Now, you be careful with this. Kid takes out 40 people.
What if Alexander York handed kids, like, like type printer paper?
Printouts. A printout telling them they're a failure.
Yeah, that'd be lovely. That'd be lovely.
That'd be great. That'd be great, actually. Or to have Marlena hand him a cigar.
Yeah, let's get kids smoking.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's tell you, win a member for life. You start them young.
Razor Ramon just throws a toothpick straight into the kid's eye.
Well, that'll learn him.
That'll teach him.
That's right. For what? I don't know, but it'll teach him.
You know what? It doesn't hurt.
No, it doesn't. Crime Time gives you something they stole. Take it for receiving stolen property.
Amazing.
Anyone out there that has any suggestions for this sort of exercise, by all means, tweet them at us because we could use some laughs. So after Duke gives his hat to the kid and therefore lice, Sean points out that Pamela Anderson will be joining the winner of the Rumble at WrestleMania, which kind of telegraphs the fact that Henry Godwin and Dick Murdoch are not winning the Royal Rumble.
Oh, no, not necessarily.
I wish Dick had won as a rib.
I like the idea of Pamela going, I am walking out to the ring with Dick. Be good.
I'm blinking.
Justin Henry blink.gif.
Anyway, Sean plugs the TV series Tech War with William Shatner. which reminds me, next week's Raw is going to be interesting.
Oh, I was about to say, we're close to a Shatner encounter.
Uh-huh. We're about to have TJ Hooker himself.
Oh, my God. This is a treat.
Captain Kirk, the host of Rescue 911. The show that was unintentionally funny in my childhood, even though it wasn't supposed to be.
Nothing says kids speaking to the kids like Shatner on your program.
William Shatner will be on Monday Night Raw next week, and by God, I can't wait because he's not the worst celebrity to ever appear on a show.
I am excited.
You should be excited. So Shatner's going to be on Raw. I realize in my notes I spell Power Slam wrong, but I don't care.
How did you spell it?
I got the W and the O backwards, so it's Power Slam.
Power Slam. He hit him with a Power Slam.
Yes. I may have had a stroke while I wrote that.
Nice.
So it's just a basic match. It's more about, like, hey, Shatner's going to be here, and Shatner has a show, and hey, we mentioned Shatner's going to be here, and while Duke demolishes poor Mike Bell.
I did like Duke's finish, the whole Tilt-A-Whirl Power Slam. I did like that.
Well, first he did a regular Power Slam, and then he did the Tilt-A-Whirl Power Slam, which is the trash compactor.
Yeah. So, it's a cool finish. It's like a test. It's like a finish that Test would have in later years.
Steph, I can't work the hydraulic pump.
Steph, I don't want to be a bin man. Oh, Matthew, be livid. Me and you doing test jokes together. He'd be furious.
He could sit on it.
He can swivel, you're right.
That's right.
Love you, Matt.
Now, this next bit, I have to say, this was an awesome vignette. What comes next?
Yes! I'm glad you said so.
Because we bag on a lot of gimmicks from 95, and for good reason. There's a lot of bad ones. For a while, I considered the only two good gimmicks from that year to start that year as being Goldust and Whale of Mercy. I have to say, this character here, based on this vignette, could have been awesome, but there were flaws to it. But those flaws were not evident in this vignette. We have a video for Kama. Now, Kama, for those of you who might not be aware, is the former Papa Shango and the future Godfather. This is Big Charles Wright, 6'7" tall, 300-something pounds. He's a killing machine out of a video game, a la Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter or Tekken. He's the supreme fighting machine. And here he is riding a motorcycle through the desert while talking in a voiceover about just what a badass he is. How he's the supreme fighting machine. He's unbeatable in any form of martial arts. And interspersed with these shots of him riding through the desert, we see him beating guys up in gyms. And the guy actually taps out in 1995 to a submission hold. He just beats up a bunch of bums, kicks him in the head, puts him in complex holds, beats him down with his fists. As he rides through the desert, no helmet on, of course, because he's a badass. And pretty soon, he'll be doing the same to everyone in the WWF. That was an awesome vignette.
I liked it.
Nothing good came after it.
No, once he got in the ring, it all went wrong. But the build was very special.
Who would you have given this to in the future? Like someone like Brock, maybe?
This feels like something you would give to... I mean, we had like Brock Lesnar. Wasn't Sylvester Turkay sort of in the early throes of a career at this point? Or am I thinking of the SmackDown podcast in 1999. I'd assume I might be.
He would have been that era out in like Rick Bassman's UPW, I guess. Maybe he would have been in Japan. I'm not sure. But yeah, Turkai, I mean, he had to look for this sort of character. And of course, the background.
But Turkai would have been great.
But I mean, there's so many MMA-based guys in the future that you could have given this gimmick to. And the in-ring part would have been great, but at least Kama looked... At least he looks suitable in the vignette. Like, damn, this guy's gonna hurt you. Like, I ain't messing with this guy. I mean, if we're Brock in the vignette, he'd be riding a bull like Mongo in Blazing Saddles.
That'd have been cool. Whilst carrying a beer keg.
Yes. Like, I ain't messing with that, dude. But the point being, for 1995, for how uncool this company is, this guy seems cool.
He seems like he could turn things around.
He seemed like he'd be a game changer. And then you realize it's just Papa Shango with hair. No disrespect, Charles Wright's a cool dude.
Yeah, I agree. But they're building up something quite special here that isn't going to pay off.
They act like they're giving us like Balrog or Sagat from Street Fighter. But they're just giving us a guy who does basic moves and occasionally throws him an STF. That's really all it is.
Mm-hmm.
Who besides Lesnar from today's WWE would you give this gimmick to? This vignette to, if you had to?
Besides Lesnar. From when? Sorry, from now or from like just across platform?
Present day.
Present day WWE. Who would I give this to? Let me have a little think around the roster. Babatunde, potentially.
That'd be a big cycle.
Bobby Lashley?
I don't know if he could pull off the vignette for the voiceover. Because
that's true.
He has a very particular manner of speaking.
He's a bit soft-spoken.
Yes,
but very hard-hitting.
That is true.
in terms of people who are just sort of cut through, Matt Riddle, maybe?
He's too laid back.
He's too chill, isn't he? You need somebody who's just like angry intensity and would destroy you and your pets.
I think I have one for... If you drop all the hocus pocus from this character, Cross.
Oh! But I quite like the hocus pocus from Cross's character.
Oh, that's true. How about Priest?
Damian Priest! Yes! That's a great shout. He even kind of does that kind of shtick at the moment anyway. Kind of like, hey, I'm a bit of a badass, but I also like a party.
Yeah, but that's true. But if you focus more on the badass part, you can definitely pull that off.
Focus more on the badass part, and you're there, aren't you? Or you could only Lorcan. No, he's too.
Yeah, you need a bigger guy.
You need a big beefy boy, don't you?
And no offense to Oni there.
Bronson Reed.
He's a big boy.
Big boy. He's a big boy. Now I think Damian Priest has got to be a guy.
Hindsight being 2020, if you had debuted Corbin this way. Even if he came in bald, he's still.
I think he should have come in bald.
I think he should have, yeah. First he had the skull, which looked bad. Now he looks like Caillou, if he joined a gang or something.
Nothing wrong with going bald, by the way. Like, there's part of me that's sort of half braced for it. I mean, I'm very blessed with hair at the moment, but I know that there's people who I went to college with who have gone bald and they've not accepted it in the sense that they've still got those bits on the side. And I see pictures of them and I think, oh, if that were me, I'd just woof, all gone. I'd embrace it. I just go, we're going bald from now on, team.
Now you're gonna end up being like Bill Murray and Kingpin, where the hair swings back up over the head while you're doing anything.
That's a hell of a look.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So after that really cool vignette that made me think, you know what, this might not be all bad after all. We have Rhodey prepping for Jarrett Singh debut. it's like, yeah, right back to square one. He's doing the mic checks. He's making sure everything's in place. They're putting a lot of emphasis on the Rhodey here.
I quite like this. Yeah, I like the Rhodey shtick.
Well, I mean, he's good in it. He embraced the role. He's an Armstrong, so of course he's not going to suck. You know, he's definitely someone worth having around, but they just haven't found his real voice yet. But they would.
Yeah.
It would just take a while.
In time, we'll get there.
We see some footage from the tag title tournament. We see the Head Shrinkers defeating Neidhart and Owen by DQ. And at this point, we say Bon Voyage Anvil. He is now gone from the company.
Is that our last sighting of Jim Neidhart?
For about a year and a half, yes.
Oh, okay. Okay, we don't need to do a retrospective just yet, then.
No, because there was still a foundation to come.
Of course, silly me.
Yeah, Neidhart apparently missed a bunch of dates after Christmas, and they just cut him loose.
Yeah, give him another year. Give him a year and a bit and he'll be back. And oh, what a comeback he makes.
Yeah, it's like, who's that? That's who. It is. I'm excited.
That will all make sense in a few years' time.
You just wait. Speaking of the Hart family, we have Owen on the King's Court. Owen is now working in the Royal Wave that Batista popularized 20 years later.
It suits him. Like, the whole that, like, just that faux royalty smarminess really fits nicely with Owen Hart.
Yes, the insincerity. And speaking of insincerity, he works in a half-assed Happy New Year to everybody, which had to be surreal for the crowd because it was December 12th when he said this. He's still rejoicing over Brett losing the belt. Of course he is, because he's Owen and he's antagonistic. But he does have a scoop, however. And because you see, Owen's talking about Brett's title history. Mentions he was tag team champion. Mentions he was Intercontinental champion. Lola to that goes, he was? I don't know, I thought that was funny, but that was pretty funny. And of course, he was WWF champion. He fulfilled the Triple Crown. Well, Owen's big scoop is that he's going to win the world title and then retire as champion. That's a weird scoop.
That is an odd scoop.
Odd scoop indeed. Mm. It's almost like they were trying to get through this taping and just said, Owen, cut out and do a promo.
Yeah, and he just, and the thing is, like, Owen's fine as a promo. He's great as a promo. But sometimes you get the odd impression that he's gone out there with three bullet points and he's padding for 20 minutes. You get that vibe sometimes, yeah. And this is one of those.
Yeah, you only have so much to work with sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And we're definitely in a bit of a reset post-holidays here. So Owen's now in the Rumble match, we find out. Good, we need more talent, although don't hold your breath for his performance in this match. And I wrote, holy shit, this green screen table shot is amazing. We now have Monsoon and Sean at a desk with the crowd somehow behind them, and it appears like they're floating.
It's just, oh my gosh. It ages beautifully, does it not?
It's amazing. I feel like I'm watching like some sort of local telethon on like my local TV channels. And they've just figured out like 1981 TV graphics and stuff in 2008 and they're putting it on TV like I can't even properly put in the words this what the joy this made me feel seeing this. it is brutal. Even for the time it was brutal, it had to be. It just had to be.
It didn't look great. Surely there's a better way of doing this. Like without having to. I get that you want to give the impression that you're there and you're live and stuff. Could you not just throw like a. Like Joey Styles used to do it with a curtain behind him. And it looked fine. We never questioned it.
It was in Paul Heyman's mom's basement.
Exactly. And it was fine. Like you could do that. I wouldn't be upset.
And go upstairs and Mama Heyman makes some sandwiches.
Oh, what a wholesome image that was of such a violent company.
Makes the crew lunch.
So what are you working on today, honey? Ah, oh, just some barbed wire death match from the other day. Ah, oh, that's lovely. Have some cucumber sandwiches.
Oh, Raven's going to do some sort of misogynistic promo about how Beulah was unfaithful to him and all that. And like, oh, that sounds fun. So next week's show is the 2-year anniversary of Monday Night Raw, Tommy.
Oh, wow. Mate, we've been doing this for 2 years.
More than 2 years, really, because of all the watch-alongs and the...
That's true.
And occasional missed weeks because of... I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it either.
I'm not doing it. That hilarious time when I said I was going on holiday and you thought I was joking. That was a time.
I forgot all about that.
Oh, that was in hindsight, it was funny when he was like, I remember I was getting into the lift at Disneyland and you went, "Where are you ready when you are?" I was like, "I'm on holiday, mate." He went, "I thought you were joking." Said, "No, I'm in Disneyland."
Oh, you're always so cheerful. I can't tell.
I'm definitely in Disney. I think I might have sent you a picture. There's Disneyland. I'm definitely here. Oh, what times we've had, mate.
Here, Here I am patronizing Donald.
Trump or Duck, either or.
So speaking of this anniversary show, we have two monumental historical matches for this show. And boy, are they doozies. For the Intercontinental title, Razor Ramon will defend the belt against Owen Hart. Sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
But in an even bigger match, because we have to stack this show because it's the anniversary. In a tuxedo match, Harvey Whippleman will face Howard Finkel.
Oh.
And in the voiceover for this
really
match.
They really built this up, didn't they?
Yep. Todd gave much more gravitas to the latter. Because their priorities are definitely in order in this company.
Oh, they really went for it, didn't they? They could just tell they were just having a laugh.
Oh, yeah. This is the Bruce Pat funny thing that Cornette would often talk about. You can tell they were just rolling in the office when this thing was put together.
We've got it next week. And am I right in thinking that John Eilley wants to watch this one with us?
Yes, we're he wanted to do it. He was keen to rejoin us, so we said, "Hey, join us for the 2-year anniversary show." And that sucker.
Hell yeah, John Eilley, we got you back, baby. John Eilley next week on the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review. Photoshop John Eilley back with us for what an anniversary show as well. Fink versus Harve.
Yeah,
that's a thing that's happening.
Are you excited,
mate? I am giddy. With excitement.
Yeah, that's the word for it. Speaking of excitement, Jeff Jarrett's in action. He's taking on Buck Quartermain, who I actually am happy to see. Underrated enhancement talent. With a great name, too.
Buck Quartermain's a brilliant... Yeah, I feel like he floats around quite a bit, does Buck Quartermain.
Should say Brock Quartermain.
Brock Quartermain. That's somebody else, isn't it? That's a real person, isn't it, Brock Quartermain?
My client, Brock Quartermain.
I thought he was a real person. I might be wrong. I'm very wrong. Buck Quartermain's a real person, not Brock Quartermain.
I learned that Jarrett actually faced Quartermain in a jobber match at an Impact taping in 2006.
Oh, really?
Yes. Jarrett has beaten Quartermain in squashes in two different companies.
That must be
a decade apart.
I wonder how many other stats you've got like that.
The thing is, I was looking up because Quartermain, I knew was a jobber in TNA in the early days of Impact. I looked up, I think it was like a 6-man tag or something. It's like, oh my God. He did face Jarrett in Impact. Hang on, let me find it real fast.
Oh, yeah, let me know.
Buck Quartermain. Go to Cage Match. Cage Match is the best archive in the world. You get pretty much everything on there. It's just a font of wrestling results and information.
It's good like that, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. All right. Guess Quartermain wrestled a lot in Florida in the mid-2000s. here we go. An 8-man tag that took place at the February 20th, 2006 Impact tapings. Jarrett team with Abyss and America's Most Wanted to defeat, listen to this dream team, Buck Quartermain, Cassidy Riley, Shark Boy, and Norman Smiley.
Jeez.
This was a match that apparently took place.
That sounds like a star-loaded experience.
That is amazing. I almost don't even know how to diagram that sentence. He was also in a 6-man tag months earlier where he teamed with future All Japan Triple Crown champion Joe Daring and a man named John Boland to lose to the Naturals and Lance Hoyt, aka Lance Archer.
Oh, nice. What a lovely little footnote.
And in addition, how about this oddball match? He teamed with Kenny King. Yes, that Kenny King. To lose to the James Gang, BG James and Kip James, a.k.a. the New Age Outlaws.
What?
Impact. We got to do some Impact stuff from like 2005, 2006, because this is just surreal.
I think we need to.
Might gain some retroactive appreciation for this company. So we got Jarrett Quartermain here. Sean and Monsoon kind of write Neidhart out, just sort of verbally put him out the pasture. We learned that Brett's coming back next week. It's a nice little match here between Jarrett and Quartermain, because Jarrett's very giving to his opponents, even if they are enhancement talents. Quartermain's getting some stuff in as I realize that his boots don't match.
They not? I never spotted that.
I did, because I'm weird like that.
I noticed he was surprisingly dominant. He usually gives the jobbers a little bit more.
Well, I mean, Jarrett's gunning for the Intercontinental belt in 3 weeks. You know, he has to take control of his opponents at some point.
Yeah.
It's like, Jeff, we're putting the belt on in 3 weeks. Spoiler. We're putting the belt on in 3 weeks. You have to gobble up Quartermain. You're not the honky-tonk man. Stop it.
I mean, it was always very kind that he did put a lot of love into those enhancement matches.
Oh, sure. And that's to his credit. But at some point, you just got to guzzle the guy up. Monsoon works in the external occipital protuberance, making me very happy. And in the funniest moment of the show, Sean talks about how nobody in the company parties crazily in regards to New Year's Eve. Nobody in the WWF is known for excessively partying.
Whatever.
Sean said this with a straight face. That is possibly the greatest lie ever told in wrestling. Other than I'll pay you next week. If that weren't enough, I howled even more at this next part when Jarrett starts doing the strut. Now, what is Jarrett's strut known as?
Oh, I don't think it had a name. Oh, isn't that? Or does it? I'm thinking of strutting and cutting, which is Brutus Beefcake strut.
Right, but the strut was invented by somebody. Somebody from the Nashville area. It's the name of a Coen Brothers movie, this man's last name.
Oh, gosh. I need another clue.
It would be the Fargo strut.
Oh, by Jackie Fargo.
Correct.
Oh.
So he's doing the Fargo strut, which it's not called the Fargo strut here because in this company they have their own set of rules. But he's doing the Fargo strut. Monsoon is aghast at Jerry. He stole that from Buddy Rogers. I mean, most of the crowd watching at that time wouldn't really understood why that's wrong. But now that I look at it, I was like, Buddy Rogers invented the Fargo strut. That was pretty funny.
Nice little nod. Like that a lot.
Monsoon mad because Jarrett's stalling. Even he wants his match to be over. Jarrett gets superplex, applies a figure four, and he wins.
There you go. Done.
Meanwhile, Al comes ready with a guitar because we're going to have some sings. Are you ready for this little mini concert there, Tommy?
I'm excited for it. Like, this feels like something that's been built for a while. At least there's some, like, storyline progression for a thing.
Well, the problem is this is the Emelina of singing.
Oh. Well, it's a girl that knocked me back in college of singing.
You knew a girl named Emelina?
I did know a girl called Emelina. She knocked me back. She knocked me back in college. Wanted just to be friends?
Is her real name Tennille?
No, her name is Yuka.
Laylee? What the hell are we talking about?
Her name is Yuka.
What are you going on about?
I'm trying to tell you about this girl that knocked me back in college.
I'm talking about Emelina the wrestler.
I'm talking about her and I'm talking about Luca. Her name is Luca. She lived on the second floor. She lived upstairs from you. I think you've seen her before.
What the hell are you talking about?
If you hear something late at night, don't ask her what it was.
Okay, it's a song that I don't know, apparently.
I'm quoting Suzanne Vega.
That's why I don't know it.
One person got that, and that one person is my new best friend. It is Pablo. He flipping loves Suzanne Vega. Mind you, he probably knows Suzanne Vega because on more than one occasion, I've caught myself walking up to him going, your name is Pablo. you are a Kato. So I'm pretty sure he's a fan of Suzanne Vega as a result of that.
Or he just hates you more.
He might just hate me more. That's more than possible.
Cats have a hard time hiding their spite.
They really do, don't they? They're buggers like that.
Well, speaking of spite, we have Jarrett singing.
Yay!
So Jarrett's getting ready. Brody's setting everything up. This is supposed to be a big moment. This is like you know, the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show, except not. Well, first, the mic is not in working order. And Jarrett's getting flustered. And then the mic stand falls over. And then he gets pissed because there's no spotlight. And everything's just going wrong. And then Monsoon says, "Where's Kevin Dunn when you need him?" Yeah, good point. Where's the camera cuts? And then, should I go on?
No, I was going to say, Kevin Dunn wasn't as prolific for camera cuts at this point. I feel like that maybe that button wasn't as fast acting as it is these days.
Well, given their technology at the time, Predis didn't have one.
That's true. There is that too.
And then, there's ear piercing feedback. So Jarrett just leaves because that's what happens. And it's coming when you receive feedback, you just ignore it. And of course, no song. All that for naught.
That was the I'm not against the idea that there's no song. It's pretty heelish, the fact that nothing happens. It's a pretty heelish thing to have to tease a concert that doesn't happen.
Well, another thing. I get that, but here's another school of thought. Mm-hmm. If the song doesn't happen, are you annoyed that it didn't happen? Are you tuning in to see the song in the first place?
I'm not, because
they
didn't announce it until the start of the show. And if it had been something that they used to plug the following week, maybe you'd be a bit annoyed.
Yeah, so it isn't the Emelina thing. It's not even the Brodus Clay debut from 9 years ago.
Mm.
But they just keep putting it off week after week. It's not even a running gag. It's just, hey, we need to fill time during Christmas. Let's have Jarrett feign singing. But whatever. I'm not a... I should get to this next segment because I'm so happy that this happened. The most important person who will appear on Raw this year appears on this show and only this show. And sadly enough, it occurs 24 years to the day before he passed away. A true genius, a true comedic genius, a very funny man, Super Dave Osborne.
Now, I have a history of Dave Osborne, but I don't know Dave Osborne. You do. So I feel like you should be the one to educate those of us in the UK and around the world who may not be familiar with Super Dave Osborne. There was a guy who did the kind of thing that he did in the UK around the same time. And it was a guy that was played by a comedian called Freddie Starr, and he played a character called Dangerous Brian. And it sounds like a similar shtick to Super Dave Osborne, but on a smaller scale. So talk to us about Super Dave Osborne.
Well, Super Dave Osborne is the real-life brother of Albert Brooks, who a lot of art listeners would know as the voice of many Simpsons characters, including Hank Scorpio. Super Dave Osborne, first the man behind the character, also played Marty Funkhauser on Curb Your Enthusiasm. So if you've seen that, you know he's hilarious. Super Dave Osborne was a stuntman. His shtick was that he was very stoic and presented himself as a role model for children. Like he was super serious about being a role model, but in his portrayal, the humor came from the fact that he wasn't really sincere. He wasn't actually a people person. He was kind of dickish to like his assistant, but he was also put on that sort of gregarious, persona around people like, hey, I'm a hero, and it's like I take this very seriously, I'm a professional. But of course the big gag was always that the stunt always went wrong. Whatever he did, he always ended up severely mangled. Things that should kill a normal person if this was real life, something always went wrong. And of course, that's 80% of the humor of any Super Dave bit. The other is just his interaction with normal people. And just his disdain toward pretty much everything, really, because he can't fully hide. But Super Dave is getting a show on USA at this point. And he's doing a little drop-in interview with Monsoon and Sean, which is the surrealometer has gone beyond 1,000 here. that this is actually happening in 1995.
What a time. What a time.
So it's this new show that he's doing in Vegas, apparently. He's in full Super Dave character where he's just stoic and sort of averse to the human conversation. We get some footage from the show. I'm happy to see Mike Walden, the host, because he was a big part of Super Dave's motif. You know, the friendly, gregarious TV host, sportscaster. He was there for all the stunts, pretty much. We see a clip of one of his bodyguards punching an agent during a segment. He's just talking about the show in general. And, of course, we have to have a clip of him getting hurt somehow. It's the Super Dave way. He shows him parachuting into this big premiere, and he flies through the glass front window of like the Civic Center. And, of course, you know, he gets out of it, mostly in one piece, but he should have died, obviously, in this sort of stunt. It was totally random to be on the show, but I was happy to see it.
Yeah, but there's been worse and more out of the unusual cameos on Raw over the last 2 years. Like Super Dave Osborne isn't out of place in comparison to some others.
It's also the best bump somebody took on the show.
It really is. Do you not think that he looks and sounds a bit like John Laurinaitis?
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
For years, I called Laurinaitis Funkhauser for that very reason.
That makes sense now.
Well, yeah, it's even look alike too, which is even eerier.
Yeah, it's a strange one, isn't it? It's a very I initially. Like, not having no knowledge really of Super Dave Osborne before this show, when the camera came on and I saw the guy in there with all the gear, I genuinely thought it was John Laurinaitis. I had a little memory, I go, oh, did Johnny Hayes do a bit here? Okay, I mean, that's not what... Oh, it's not him, okay.
I come here from all Japan. I'm wearing a white bodysuit and a baseball cap.
John, can I get Road Warrior Dave Osborne?
People power.
What a rush to the hospital. Nice.
Some recommended viewing. Go on YouTube and look up Super Dave Osborne, David Letterman. There are entire reels of his appearances on Letterman through the years, of him promoting his various stunts from his different shows, or even just Super Dave just bits in general, where he's trying out new equipment or just doing haphazard stunts that result in what should be a fiery, bloody death. All of them are hilarious. Mm. All of them are.
It's a good time.
And for those, and for some not safe for work video, I'll warn you that there's some language in there. But for a very not safe for work one, on Curb Your Enthusiasm, he had the funniest moment in the history of the show when he made Jerry Seinfeld laugh legitimately at a very vulgar joke.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you ever know about this, but I'd rather talk about this than the friggin' next match. But it was a bit where they did a whole season on Curb where they were doing like a Seinfeld reunion show. Like the entire season threaded around as like this one plot point. And Funkhauser, Super Dave's character on the show, was like Larry David's moocher friend, who was like very idiosyncratic. And he's there for like this table read with Seinfeld and Larry David. And so he has an interaction with Seinfeld, and Larry David just wants to get him the hell out of there because he's a distraction. But he wants to tell Seinfeld a joke. And Seinfeld's very polite. He obliges him. And I'm not going to do the joke here because it is very vulgar. But the thing is, Seinfeld didn't know what joke he was going to tell in real life. He just picked one with the intent of making Seinfeld laugh. And he got to the punchline, which is, "Oh, it's a doozy." And Seinfeld bust out laughing. And they had to edit it down from like 5 minutes of him just laughing nonstop because he did not see it coming. He was doubled over.
Oh, nice. I love watching stuff like that.
And it is beautiful. And Larry David somehow, like, I think he had to bite his cheek just to hold it together because he holds it together, but not by much. And in the scene, he's supposed to be annoyed at Super Dave anyway, so he would have blown it if he had busted out. Thank God he held up.
Amazing.
You just don't watch that with sensitive people present.
No. Yeah. Open-minded folk only apply.
Yes. So now that that's done, let's get to this last piece of crap. you see Luger Tatanga versus Big... I wrote Luger Tatanka versus Bigelow Tatanka because that's how much I cared. It's Luger and Bulldog versus Bigelow Tatanka in a rematch from earlier. Joined in progress, no entrances, we just get right into it. We're in a rest hole when this thing starts. What a weird show this is.
It's such a weird show.
Jarrett doesn't sing, Super Dave shows up, we get a match twice. This is... We're off to a great start for 95. Sean points out that Luger has always been lethargic. Sean doesn't like Luger.
He's really very anti-Luger. There was a heat between them or not?
Might have been. I don't know.
Might have been something.
Sean says 95 isn't going to be that. Blah, 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 blah. Sean says 95 is not going to be that bright for Luger. Apparently Sean is like Dave Meltzer, not seeing the future. He says Luger's already been exposed for his lack of talent.
Jeez. Shooing the guy.
Is Sean Oliver sitting next to him and they're doing a video? What's going on here? Is it like Timeline 95?
Gosh.
So Bigelow hits the falling headbutts. Even the crowd sweetener fell asleep. Or they loaned it to the NFL for use this week. We get a commercial break during this match. This match. We come back. Sean says the match has been going on forever. He's probably right. Monsoon says Luger's been carrying 85% of this match. I don't think it means what you think it means.
It's he's certainly very kind about the percentage.
Well, what carrying? Like he's. I mean, he means it in the sense that Luger's been in the ring the whole time taking the beating. But it's, we think of carrying is something else, obviously.
Mm.
No one's carrying this match. It's just sitting there. So Luger gets the alleged hot tag. Despite both men holding his feet, that was kind of a cool spot, actually. Bulldog livens things up a little bit. He cleans house for a little while. It's almost the same formula as the first go-around. And then we get the big heel miscommunication spot. Tatanka collides with Bigelow on the apron. Bigelow falls off. Tatanka's stunned. Bulldog pins him after that. No other move. Not a clothesline. Not a slam. Just he hits Bigelow, falls down, and gets pinned.
They used all the clotheslines in the previous match. That's the problem.
I guess the meter ran out.
They fulfilled their quota.
Apparently. Afterwards, DiBiase yells at Bigelow and Tatanka for bumbling. As we can see, the basketball backboards are folded up for this show. Because this is a high school gymnasium. And it's just... It really is a sign of 95 to come.
They had a there's potential here for as Bam Bam Bigelow as a top babyface, maybe in a main event for a major pay per view.
Yeah, but it's we're sure going about it in a funny way.
We really are, aren't we?
And that was the first roll of 95. As we get one last plug in for next week's anniversary show, which at least sounds a little more promising. Should have a little more life behind it. And in fact, it isn't a much better building. I will say that much.
Which building are we in next week?
Hang on, let me verify this. Because I know this city. I'm just going to make sure it's the right building. It's definitely bigger than, well, this flat and shite hole we have here.
Flat and shite hole.
How else would you describe it?
Oh, no, there's no other way to describe it. It's perfectly descripted.
It's, they're at the Summit in Houston, Texas.
Oh, wow.
The first Raw taping, not only in Houston, but I believe outside the Eastern time zone.
Well, I am excited for it. My body is ready for it.
It's, it'll definitely feel a lot bigger. And with Shatner there, how could it not?
Always feels bigger inside. That's what she says. So
what is Texas? Everything's bigger in Texas.
Everything's bigger in Texas. They say that as well, don't they? So there you go. Off we go to 1995. Justin, are you excited? Excellent. Me neither. Next week, the Raw Anniversary Special. It is the second anniversary of Monday Night Raw. Me and Justin will be here along with the King of Photoshop, the Sultan of Paint Shop Pro, John Eiley, will be joining us for the special 2 anniversary of Monday Night Raw. I am pumped for it, as is Justin Henry. And until we are together again, he is at JRH Writing. I am at Tom Campbell. Together, we are at Cultaholic on Twitter. We will speak to you next week. Don't forget to join us. So are you sure John Laurinaitis isn't Super Dave Osborne? Because I think he might have been. Love you, bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.